welcome back to another episode of the Authentic Recruiter Podcast. If you are part of the recruitment industry and you believe that authentic recruiters change lives, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Claire Akers. I want to say thanks for tuning in. I am so glad you're here. Let's dive in to the episode. Today, I am delighted to be sitting down with Wendy McDougall, who is the CEO and founder of Firefish Software. Wendy, thank you so much for sparing the time to talk to me today. How are you?
Oh, it's a pleasure, Claire, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, it's nice to do it this time round, isn't it? Because we think we worked out, it was about a year ago that I came on yours.
It is, and it was a great show, and I thoroughly enjoyed your ethos and your values, and I know that's what we're going to be talking a wee bit about today. So it's lovely to be able to return the favour and come on to your show.
Fabulous. Well, let's jump straight into it. So start us off, Wendy. Tell me a little bit about your story and how you ended up doing what you do today, if you would.
I suppose where to start. Well, I was a recruiter and I'm a recruiter at heart. So I think that's the main thing. But I also had a love of technology. So when I was a recruiter, I was a tech recruiter as well. And my recruitment agency that I spun out, so that was my first business prior to Firefish, I was helping a lot of the Scottish tech sector and new start companies grow. So I would come up with their resource plans in terms of either whether or not they had seed capital or they were going for growth in terms of venture or series one, series two, et cetera, as well, and sort of helping them to get investment with the resource plans that they needed in terms of people, and B then actually fill those roles as well. So I'd spent maybe sort of 10 years in that recruitment agency helping a lot of these tech companies grow, and I learned a lot, because that's one of the benefits you get of a recruiter. You learn so much about the sector you're recruiting into.
Yeah,
and at the same time, I was getting very frustrated with the technology I had to use. So I saw these tech companies being successful and growing, and I was quite jealous of that. And I had a tech problem. So because I knew everybody in the industry in the IT sector, myself and Andrew Mackay, my co-founder of Firefish, we decided to start growing our own CRM and marketing platform. So that started, and we spun it out in 2010.
Awesome. So ask everybody this. Tell me about your entrepreneurial niggle. What was that point where you thought, you know what, I could do this better for myself? I don't want to go and get another job. I want to be my own boss. What was the niggle for you?
Well, it's funny, actually. I didn't really have a niggle. I just knew this was always going to be something that I was going to do. So my father is second generation entrepreneur as well, in terms of family business. And I was brought up in that family business. So everything I was absorbed, or I was like, you know, shown or part of, all evolved around his family business.
How interesting. And what sort of business was it?
So nothing related, but it was Ellison McDougall Lifts Limited, which was a bespoke lift manufacturer. He did all the lifts in Canary Wharf, from a Scottish base, etc. as well. So he then sold out to Coney, which is, if you know, Coney and Otis, they're the two main global players. So that happened when I was in my teens, and at that point, that was it. I was, you know, knew that I was going to set up my own business. So really, my journey was about getting enough experience for me to feel that I was ready to go it alone.
Yeah.
Because my dad didn't let me do that straight away from school. I don't think he really wanted me to go down the entrepreneurial journey. I think he felt that he'd done the hard stuff and he wanted me to go in. So he was very much, go and get the experience first.
That's so interesting. I know you say they're not related into industries, but I think it's so, so important just to kind of grow up around that language. And just imagine the conversations around the dinner table about employing people and deals and all that kind of stuff. You must absorb it by some sort of osmosis.
Yeah, and most weekends, my dad didn't work on Sundays. He worked all Saturday mornings as well. So on a Saturday morning, you know, if my mum was running around with my other two sisters, I was in the office. So I was in the office playing receptionist, or going and looking at all the boards of what was happening with the project plans and everything else. And it just totally sort of, absorbed into me.
Do you know what? that is very encouraging, because I try to do that with my kids. I've got three kids, and I try to show them how to be an entrepreneur. So it's, well, I'll keep you posted on how it turns out, but it's interesting to know that it worked for you.
Well, it is, but, you know, my daughter, so I've got one daughter, I think we've talked about it as well, she's 12, and I don't see, I see some good sales capability for her, but I don't see the entrepreneurial bug. So I don't, I think you've got to, you know, my other two sisters did exactly the same as me, total opposites. You know, one's a teacher, you know, working in a school, and another person is out, you know, in the countryside hugging trees and doing town planning and stuff like that. So, I think you've also got to, there's got to be something in your DNA, I think, as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, fabulous. So I think I have tried the good, the bad, and the ugly of CRM systems when I was a recruiter and I had my own technology recruitment business. Tell me about Firefish, your mission, and why you're different.
Yeah, so I really went out because, you know, back in 2010, the whole world was changing to recognizing the consumer. If you think about it in consumer tech, like Amazon, Rightmove, Zoopla, what the consumer was doing on the web. But if you looked at all the sort of applicant tracking systems or CRM systems, they're all standalone. They're not engaging with the web. So I could see that all the other sectors were starting to understand how many people were coming and showing interest, which pages were they clicking on, were they getting to the apply page, were they converting? So you could actually have a sort of almost turn the tap on for candidates coming in, turn the tap off or redirect the traffic on the areas that you were wanting to then generate candidates through your web. But nothing of this was happening in our industry. All was happening was you had a database and the candidates would only be updated if you called them and said, hey. Now, unless you wanted to call all your candidates, you know, every week and annoy them, then, you know, you weren't aware if they started to look or they came back on the market. You were reliant on your recruiters, which I just thought was totally inefficient. And the innovation was out there, so I wanted to bring it into that market. So really, that's what the mission of Firefish, and it still is today, is to really maximize and re-engage in that candidate database to make sure that your database isn't the sort of industry standard of 10 to 15% of candidates that you will have had two-way engagement in the last 2 years. The rest of it is dead data. You know, with Firefish, because we've got this growth engine, engagement engine going, you know, it's right up to 90% within 6 months of using Firefish.
Interesting. And I'm just wondering, this question's just come to me, so forgive me if I'm putting you on the spot, but what's your thoughts on the candidate behavior that we're seeing in the industry at the moment? So there's a lot of ghosting, a lot of counter offers, a lot of backdooring, a lot of, I don't know how to describe it as behavior, but are you finding that that is the case first and foremost, or are you hearing a lot of anecdotal evidence about that, or are you finding that the data is supporting those trends?
No, the data is definitely supporting those trends. So you can see in our software, and we do a lot of data work. You know, we've got job flow every month that comes out. You can get all of that from our blog. But you're definitely seeing that, you know, there is terminations, withdrawals on offers. So, you know, you're filling a job sort of twice at least every time. So we can see the data is backing what's happening. I think what Firefish does, though, is that if you've offered a candidate and they're still checking out your job alerts, or they're still checking out all your other vacancies, that's giving early warning signs to your recruiter that they're looking at different things. So I think we're trying to prep them as much as possible for candidates that may end up doing that.
Yes, you've kind of got red flags on behaviour. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what we're trying to look at, is understanding the behaviour, better the engagement, and make more placements.
Hey, it's Claire here. Just jumping on to check whether you have taken my recruitment impact and income scorecard. It's a short quiz, just 30 questions, and at the end, you will get your score and your personalised report. So if you're looking to grow a profitable and purpose-led company, what are you waiting for? Take the scorecard totally free of charge. There is a link in the show notes. Let's get back to the episode. We've talked before, and it's always been your intention to grow a truly values-led company, you know, something a little bit different. talk to me about your experience of doing that, and have you got any top tips about how to actually do that in amongst all the commercial pressures that we've got?
Yeah, so for me, the DNA of any company is values based, and I'm really strong on that. But we can get it so wrong. And I've done it. You know, when I went out, I knew that that's what I wanted to drive it, because your values should allow you to get through the hard times, make difficult decisions, you know, steer everybody in their journeys, their careers, their rewards. All of those things should fall into place around that DNA, those values, and it should drive your culture. However, the first time I remember, what is your values? What are we going to stand for? And I remember I thought it was so clever, because, you know, I put the word success, and I had a value of each letter, et cetera, as well. So that meant there was like seven values. And then 6 months later, I sort of asked everybody, and even I couldn't remember what all the values were. So, you know, from that perspective, like, if you've got more, for me, what's happened in our business when we simplified all that down, if you've got more than three, nobody will remember them, right? Maybe get away with four, but simplify them right down to things that people can remember, and then drive that through in everything we do. You know, you can't have it just as boards up on the wall or anything like that. It's got to be part of the nature and the way that you work. So to give you some examples, you know, our values within Farfish are, you know, be your customer, strive to be your best, and then love the fish. And so we use those three values, and then we have it in everything we do. So we recruit and score against those, we ask the questions against them. So you're looking at each of the role profiles, and we've got then the questions that would demonstrate those values within each of the areas of that profile of what we're looking for. Our careers journeys are based on each of those values, and you're scoring against them as to whether or not you're ready for promotion, but on those value-based criteria. We reward every week, every month, in terms of, you know, living those values. And looking back on the pandemic, the most recent sort of harder time, it was our values that drove, you know, the behavior of all of our employees, although we call them fish, through supporting our customers and what we could do, because that was our top values. Like, put yourself in the seat of that journey, or that customer. You know, how are they feeling right now? How can we support them? And that helped to really sort of make some hard decisions and support our customers, over commercially driven tactics.
I love that. It's values is at the heart of everything that I do as well. And I do a lot of workshops with clients. I've got one tomorrow actually on capturing what a brand new company values are going to be and getting those really clear. And I think values have come under a bit of attack recently, because a lot of companies kind of have picked some, stuck them on the wall and called it done. And it ends up just being, well, corporate bullshit, if one wants a better term. And I love what you're doing, because this is what I teach as well, is that it's not just about capturing the noun of the values, it's about looking at what the verb they actually mean in practice. And I love that you've kind of mapped out each touch point of what that means in practice, and how you live and breathe that every day.
I think that's fantastic.
How did you bring values to the forefront? You know, how did you know to put values first and foremost?
So actually, I don't know if any of your listeners will know this individual, but great Scottish entrepreneur, Bob Keelier. And he had a company up in Aberdeen supporting the oil company, PNT or PMP. I can't even know. There's the thing for you. I remember all the discussion he did about values rather than even his company name.
Yes.
I went to listen to him as part of the Entrepreneur Exchange. Again, it's a network of other business owners up here, you know, years ago. And he just blew me away with how he drove this massive organization and grew it phenomenally, basing everything around his values. And for me, that just gave me the DNA of a company to expand everything through that. And if you do generally put it at the heart of everything you do, everything seemed to me just to get easy in terms of saying, right, okay, so, you know, where do I have to start with this function or system? You know, like, for example, career journeys, performance, right? So you go, right, where do I have to start? I don't have to think about that starting point. I then have to think, right, okay, this system, how do we build the system around our values? You know, how do we build our recruitment around our values? So it can, that gives me the structure to put into each of my systems within the business without even having to think. And that just made it dead easy for me.
Yeah, yeah. So often you see it the other way around, don't you? People get the financials and the commercial plan first, think, right, okay, how do we shoehorn values into this? But I'm very much with you that if you know what your values are, everything else just stems and follows from there. And it's easy to make those tough decisions if you've got those North Stars to guide you through.
And I think one of the other keys, you know, I was privileged enough to work for an amazing recruitment company before I went out for on my own company in Scotland again, Melville Craig. They were the largest independent recruiter up here. And they were then acquired by what is now Hudson, but it was TMP before that as well. So I went through sort of almost three different rebranding within a very short space of time. And I think for me as an employee, and this is how I understood it, like I had to relate. To be genuine, I wanted to relate to working for a company that I could relate my values to. So in the third sort of acquisition or the second acquisition or brand change, when I had to go and take the word entrepreneurialism off the wall, I thought this is not the company for me any longer. So that's a really that was a really good understanding and sort of awareness for me as well, in that your employees will work for you because they can relate their values with the company's values. So if you don't get that right, then you're going to mismatch. And if you start like changing that up, you know, as long as, you know, like take the entrepreneurialism. I mean, that's a fundamental thing for me. I wanted to work for an entrepreneurial company before I went out. So if I took that off the wall because I was changing their values for you, I thought, right, okay, if this is a direction this company is going down, I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You must see a lot of different recruitment company cultures in your line of work. What's the most common mistake that you see, you know, that you want to just grab people by the scruff of the neck and shake them and go, don't do that?
In terms of sort of internal cultures or in terms of
culture and values and that sort of conversation?
I think I think the main thing is, like, we all think we're different, and I'll be honest, you know, majority of recruitment companies are exactly the same. Okay. But you have a different approach to doing things. Now, some companies, we call it almost the Me Toos. Okay. Yes. So you grow up and you want to copy another company. Now, that's okay. But as long as you become, and I did that in the early days, I've looked at, you know, two of my favorite companies, HubSpot and Netflix, right? I aspire to be those, you know, larger companies. So if you are going to go and do a Me Too, make sure it's a really big Me Too in terms of learning from that company. But I think we see some of the recruitment companies sort of like what one other of their competitors is doing and try to replicate that. Mm-hmm. But what they don't understand is that replication might not be true to their own self. So you're never going to be in sync with that, you know, just because this company is really good at, you know, speaking in this market, going out and doing that all over social. If you're culture doesn't map with that, or your recruit, you know, your employees don't map with that type, because actually that's not who you are, you know, it's not going to work. So I think what I would be saying to other recruiters is just really understand and be confident with who you are, and you will be bolder and better in your own right. Don't try and be something you're not, because that's always going to fail.
Now you are speaking my language, Wendy. I absolutely agree with you on this. And so I think the latest statistic, and please correct me if I'm wrong on this, 39,000 recruitment companies in the UK. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the work that I do, a lot of people, recruitment business owners' biggest fear is being seen as that Me Too recruiter. And of course it's going to be replication, because there's only so many ways to recruit, right?
Yeah.
And I've done it myself. I had a technology recruitment business for 5 years, and I looked around one day, my team sitting around, and I thought, this is somebody else's dream. This is not mine. You know, I'm growing it according to this cookie cutter approach, which kind of works, but my heart wasn't in it, if I'm really, really honest. And that kind of inspires the work that I do now, is helping companies come up with true differentiators that mean something rather than just being that Me Too recruiter that you describe. And actually, if you go copy a competition, you just end up becoming a watered down version of their original idea. So that's really, really interesting.
Yeah, totally agree.
So I guess what we're saying is it's another vote for values, isn't it? If you know what your values are, you can identify some true differentiators based on where that's coming from.
Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, when you're growing your own business, you're going to be in that for a long time. Okay, so make sure that you and at the end of the day as well, we all like to think that, you know, not going to be the founder's sort of, you know, it's not going to be part, it's going to move on from the founder and everything else. But see, at the start, it is what the founder, it is what you're leading. It's got to be your values, because again, you're going to be in this for a journey. So if it's not a reflection of you, you're not going to be happy even running your own business as well. So I think, you know, just getting that sort of what company you want to actually run is so important for the founders of the business, and to all agree with that and see in reflection, you know, you as a reflector of that business and vice versa. It can always evolve as it grows, but in the earlier days, you know, and actually I'm saying earlier days, you know, at least, you know, 5 to 10 years, it's going to be evolving around your values as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's another really good reflection of one of my other kind of key pillars of what I teach is trying to make sure that the vision's bigger than the fear. We know, don't we, there's always going to be some rough times as a recruitment business owner, and as long as your vision's bigger than the fear or anything you're facing, you're gonna see through them.
Definitely. So
imagine there's someone listening to this who has just quit their job. They've just had the epiphany. They go, hang on, why am I earning 50, 20% commission on these deals when I could be earning 100% for myself? And they've had the epiphany and they want to set up on their own. What would your advice for an aspiring entrepreneur be?
Well, first of all, well done and congratulations for making the jump. And I say that, I don't say that lightly at all, because it's not for everybody. You know, it really has to be, you have to, you're resilient as a recruiter, but your resilience as a business owner, when at least you start, now that I'm talking about a business owner that's going to grow their business to scale, rather than maybe a business owner that's looking for, you know, a lifestyle business. Okay. Because a lifestyle business, you're in control, enjoy your life and the balance. But if you're trying to scale, you know, the pressure that you will go through as part of that entrepreneurial journey is high. And as you said, Claire, there's highs and there's lows. So getting through the lows, you know, needs an extra push. And to be quite honest, I've never earned more as running two businesses than I was when I was a top recruiter working for somebody else. All right. So I think that's also worth sort of reflecting on it as well. And that might be just my view, because when I'm running a business, I've always been running a business for growth. So I'm always putting everything back into the business.
Yes.
So I'm probably the last to take anything out. But that's my personal, and a lot of people say that's the wrong way to do it, but that's my personal sort of preference. And it's worked for me in terms of bootstrapping both businesses, et cetera, as well. So I'd say, well done. Make sure though that you're ready for that ride. Don't be too hard on yourself, but make sure you're also celebrating the successes, because you know, those are, we don't as entrepreneurs celebrate our successes enough. So make sure you're doing that. Next thing is, I would say, and you know, Claire, I'm sure you're acting as a coach in that way, you know, get a coach, get somebody that you are able to bounce off ideas and look at different things, early structures. You know, I always relate it to going to the gym. You know, everybody doesn't think twice about having a, you know, personal assistant, or not personal assistant, a PT, personal trainer there to help maximize in your gym training. Absolutely get that in terms of your coach to help you grow. And I think also one of the mistakes I made in my first business was I probably was going for growth, whereas actually in the first 5 years, because of the timing, you know, I went a couple of recessions through of it as well. And well, one blip and then one major, the financial crisis, et cetera. I probably, if somebody had just said to me, you know, just run this as a lifestyle business, I probably would have had more fun personally. And I wish, really, looking back on that, I would have done that and then known when to grow, you know. So I think I think that was one of the things that, you know, I would have felt okay about that. And the next thing as well is, please do not go and run your own business if you think you're going to get rich quick. It's not going to happen. An entrepreneurial journey is a journey. You know, there is a few stories out there. You see, you know, somebody turning, you know, nothing into a huge amount very quickly. But the reality is, it's not. You've got to really, really want to be running a business for you to do that. And I honestly think, you know, minimum 5-10 years that, well, to be honest, I know everybody wants to say 5 years, but 10 years is the minimum that you're going to be doing it and in it in order to be able to make something of substance.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant advice, because I think it's a problem with LinkedIn culture as well, isn't it? You see all the shiny entrepreneurs selling the businesses.
And they make it look easy. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not. And I've got plenty of grey hairs and wrinkles. I'll be 7 years in July. Yeah. Running my own business, and there's been plenty of times I've wanted to shut the towel in. Absolutely, of course there has. But again, I said it before, vision greater than the fear, and I just love it. I absolutely love it. I love being independent, I love being creative, I love being able to make a difference in the way that I see fit. And I think once you've got that bug, it's really, really difficult to imagine.
And you've got to love it. And that's where, if we relate it back to the values, it's because it's your business, you're running it the way you want to. And you're actually, you know, you're coaching in the way that means, and it's passionate to you. It's, again, you know, it's aligned with what your service is as well. And if that wasn't in sync, it'd be hard work. It wouldn't feel easy to deliver as well. Yeah. And that's exactly the same of how I feel that you've got to sort of align things. But as you said, you love it. So, you know, if you are a new recruiter going out your own, A, obviously make sure you buy Farfetch, but B, you know, really think about it as long term and, you know, love the journey.
Yeah, definitely. Okay then, so final question, what's a book or a podcast that you couldn't live without?
Yes, so I probably mentioned one of the companies that you know, really made a difference to me, which is Netflix. I've loved their story. Obviously they're going through a wee bit of more of a harder time right now, but I've really loved their story. And I think the book around Netflix, No Rules, which is really looking at how they develop their culture, you know, just building a company scale, but effectively continuing that culture and also going into a real sort of transparency of trust amongst their employees. When we went into the pandemic, that was phenomenal for me because it gave me the sort of real boots and the creativity to continue the culture, but in a work from anywhere environment. So really recommend that.
Oh, nice.
And I think for any recruiter going out, you know, we're great at recruitment, but recruitment is marketing. So I think that getting the concepts, a lot of recruiters struggle. They think, right, we'll hire somebody for marketing. Okay, let's just get them to do my web. But they don't actually understand how to fully maximize on the marketing person for that whole year. So, or for the business as usual, sort of actually giving a return. So Inbound Marketing by HubSpot is another great book. And it just gives you that ethos of how to deliver content, get results from it without spending a fortune. So I thought those two books are great.
Yeah, those are great. Thanks for the recommendations.
But on the podcast just now, can't live out. Well, I'm really enjoying, can I live without it? But I'm really enjoying, probably like a lot of your viewers as well, and the Stephen Bartlett CEO Diaries just now. I think they're really interesting just now. And yeah, I'm really enjoying his podcast.
Yeah. Did you listen to the one the other week with Simon Sinek?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. That fits beautifully with what we've been
it
talking
does.
About.
Yeah. Well, a lot of his books are great as well, actually. So, you know, early, I think he was Purple Cow, was he not? I'm sure he's done a couple of books out there as well. So I think there's some good stuff out there as well.
Awesome. Oh, Wendy, I could talk to you all day, but I've got to leave it there for now. Maybe we can do a follow-up in 6 months' time. But
yeah, we'll have to get you back on my show as well. So yeah, we'll do that too. So
yeah, really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
That's a pleasure, Claire. Thanks very much.
That is it for today. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if we're not already, let's connect on LinkedIn. See you next time.